Hello and welcome to this new podcast series from Transition. We're really excited to be bringing you a new season in our Transition podcast. And as many of you will know, for Transition, Taiwan is a place that has really impacted us, really influenced us. It's changed in many ways the direction of our band and our music and our lives. Traveling there, being there, living there, being immersed in the culture, the language, the music and the lifestyle. And that's a story which we think is really exciting and good to tell. But in this series, we want to also tell stories from friends of ours, people that we've got to know, people we've journeyed with, who have been impacted and influenced in a different way by something about Taiwan, something about being there or something about the life in Taiwan. So today we're really excited to welcome a very old friend of ours.
That's right. Someone who started Transition with us, someone who was on the very first journey to Taiwan, and someone who's gone on to do huge things in the world of comedy since then. So without further ado, we'd love to welcome Steve Dunn. Steve, great to have you with us.
No, it's really nice to speak to you guys. It's been a couple of years since I've seen you.
It has, hasn't it? Yeah. Time, I feel like the pandemic's kind of just robbed 2 or 3 years, so they've just vanished like that.
Yeah. I keep saying, like, when is it going to feel like 2019 wasn't last year?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a good way of describing the feeling, I think.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah. Diving straight into things, one of the things that we wanted to make a bit of a series about is to do with Taiwan is a place that changed us, changed our life direction in many ways and what we do and has influenced what we do right up to now. And you were one of the early pioneers together, first going to Taiwan and first getting immersed in the music scene there. So the first question I wanted to ask you in regard to that was, if you think back now, what's like your first memory of the first time in Taiwan?
I actually think it's like quite a strong impression because I think I was probably 18, maybe 19.
Wow,
when
okay.
We went, and I hadn't really been to that many places. A couple of places in Europe. That was really my first experience of going to a really different culture. That was far away as well.
Yeah.
Now I think back, I'm like, oh yeah, wow, that's an amazing experience. I actually have a real memory of arriving at the airport. I kept expecting them to be like, you can't come in. Because I was just like, oh, there's no way they'll just let us in. Yeah, I have a memory of being in the airport, seeing the written Chinese language. It makes you feel like you're not at home when you're in France and you see a different language. But like, when it's like, you don't even recognize the letters or... it's not even letters. Do you know what I mean? It's like so far removed from what I knew at that point. And so it was just really like, oh, I'm in a really different place. But it's a really cool place to go for that experience because it's really welcoming. It's really easy to like step into Taiwan. The cultural differences you have between yourself and that culture, it's like it's not an issue. They're quite a relaxed people. It just felt easy. It was like you were able to just enjoy the fact that you're somewhere that you've never been before, rather than be kind of on guard. Sometimes I've been to places where you feel a bit on guard for the first few days until you get your head around where
yeah.
you are.
Yeah.
I've been to Taiwan 8 times.
Wow.
I really remember on one trip, because you know in the early days, we used to stay at the YMCA by main station.
That's right, yeah.
Yep. Right in the middle of all the action.
Right in the center yeah, of Taipei. Do you remember there was a park quite close
that's
to
right,
us?
That's right, yeah. The 228 Peace Park.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I remember one time being there, probably just having like, we were probably just drinking tea and kind of hanging out in the afternoon. But I have a sudden memory of us like, maybe we were kicking a ball or I don't know what we were doing. But it was like, oh, we've left all our bags 30 meters away on a bench.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Yeah.
That's like an image that kind of sticks in my head of like what that place is like, because it's just very easy to feel safe. Maybe naively, I don't know, but like I never experienced much threat there at all. It was just so kind of easy to be in.
It's I think of the flip side. I know that there's a couple of times when I've seen Taiwanese people, students in the UK, in coffee shops and just leave the laptop on the table and go to the toilet, and I'll go over and say, right, guys, don't do that here.
Yeah,
it's not so wise to do that in the UK, but that, you know, that's what they do in Taiwan. You get your spot and you save the spot with your phone or your laptop or something, and then like you say, naively, it's not there's no crime, because there is, but there's probably less of it than maybe we're used to over here.
Yeah, I remember losing my wallet one time and just looking everywhere for it. And I'd been in the gym that day and I'd been around the town and I thought, there's no way I'll find it. But actually the next day, I got a phone call from a student who was at the university who said, I found your wallet.
Yeah.
So I was so happy. And he brought it back. I thought, I'll give him a reward because there's probably not much money in. And there was more money than I remembered. So it was great. I gave him a bit of a reward and I had some left over afterwards.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated his honesty and it really shaped my view of the place that we were in. So it was great.
Yeah, I think it's just like there's obviously a very complicated sociological difference between two cultures that you can't really pinpoint. But like, I know that like a broad, massive difference between our culture and quite a lot of cultures in the Far East is just the sense of your identity being a part of your community as opposed to your identity maybe being more individual like we have. Yeah, I read a really interesting thing the other day, actually, about it was about Japanese culture, but I think it applies. It was saying that like if you show an underwater scene to an American and say, tell me what you just saw, they'll describe the fish and the crabs and the animals mostly that they saw. Whereas if you show it to a Japanese person, they'll describe the seabed and the color of the water and things like that. So they're like more culturally raised to understand context. The point that it was making, which was quite nice, was the best picture you'll get is by asking an American and a Japanese person, they'll kind of cover each other's blind spots, as opposed to asking 20 Japanese people or 20. Do you know what I mean? It was just an interesting kind of cultural difference. I think that is apparent in Taiwan.
Yeah, I really think that is the case in Taiwan. And I think it's funny the way you can go to a sporting event and everyone will help clear up afterwards. And it's just great, that community mindedness.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
So thinking musically then, because the first time we all went to Taiwan together was for a music festival. So we went as Transition. And one of the great things about that was the chance to then be involved with and see and listen to and meet lots of other Taiwanese bands. So thinking of musical culture, were there any things that particularly struck you being immersed in that festival, which, you know, was the premier indie festival, rock festival at the time?
It was a really cool festival, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So good.
Spring Scream. And it's funny, actually, just we probably landed in Taipei. 2 or 3 days later, we went down to the festival. And actually, I think Taiwan's really weird because like it's probably, I mean, it's smaller than Britain, but it's probably about the size of England, maybe. Is that about right?
Even slightly smaller, actually, than England. Yeah.
And so that's not that big. But it's something about the where it's positioned in the world means that I remember being like, oh, it's really different at the bottom of the island than it is at the top.
Yeah.
Mm. The top was quite rainy and humid.
Taipei being a basin like that, it's famous for being wet, but
yeah. And then it's just like you get to the bottom of the island, Kenting, and it's just like tropical.
Yeah,
so it was really cool, isn't it? I remember we did like an overnight bus, I think.
Yeah, we did an overnight bus that we turned up to catch it at midday because I thought it was midday, not midnight.
Oh, I do remember that now. So we hung around for 12 hours and then got like a
12-hour night bus.
Yeah, we did. Yeah,
but anyway, yes, the festival was really cool. I kind of didn't really know what to expect musically. Now I think back, there's probably three different elements to what I found in Taiwan musically. It was like the popular music that's probably on TV and radio, which is kind of similar to K-pop, J-pop.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It felt like we discovered a real subculture, a real scene of bands that were actually like a lot more alternative than I was anticipating.
Yeah.
Very indie. There was a lot of creativity and a lot of people having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really guitar-y and just really cool.
Yeah.
Kind of the two bands that really I loved, and it was really cool just to kind of become friends with them at the time, was Chasing Sparrow.
Yeah.
Who were just like a really cool kind of quirky band. And then Green Eyes. Are Green Eyes still going?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Uchain is the only constant member.
It's kind of his project, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
But he's carried the flag.
It's so cool because you guys still know Uchain.
Yeah.
Well, and interestingly, so you mentioned these two bands. So Uchain then would have probably been a similar age to you. You say you were 19, then I think I was 20. And he's gone on through the ranks, I guess, of, in some ways, he almost represents the whole indie scene, that it's gone from that very organic, very new, and it's matured now to be where there's a lot of crossover between the indie and the pop scenes.
Yeah.
There's a lot more market for bands now compared to what there used to be. And he's one of the top producers in Taiwan now. So he produces a lot of bands. I mean, he does some pop stuff as well, but his forte, I guess, is the band scene. And so now most of the award-winning bands are all produced by him.
It's cool, that, isn't it? I love that. Like, we were just at this festival and we were all just sort of like, well, I'll just go to that stage and see what's on.
Mm.
And then, and that's definitely, I remember going, walking over and going, Green Eyes, okay. And walking over and just being like, that was great. And from there on in is a chain of events where you guys still know him.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in probably 10 years, but I would love to see him one day. It's just, that's cool, isn't it? Like these tiny little moments, who knows where they'll go.
Yeah, absolutely.
What things struck you about Green Eyes then?
It was just how like creative they were. At the time, the main thing I would be looking for is whether or not they care about what they're doing.
Oh, yes.
They felt like they cared about the music.
Mm.
They cared about what they were doing. And yeah, they were just passionate about it. And actually, they were quite funny. You know, I remember they had a song that would fade out live.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember they used to do that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And they would just have a refrain at the end, and it would just get, and they'd all get further and further away from the mics and play their instruments quieter and quieter. It was just yeah, stuff like that, where you're just like, that's just people really enjoying what they're doing.
Yeah.
And trying out different stuff. And his guitar sounds were always really interesting, and actually just his guitars. He always had quite cool different guitars.
Yeah.
Use ukuleles and like stuff like that. And he was obviously into sound, so you kind of translate into him being a good producer.
And can you remember times after when you met them? You know, the kind of interactions, what were they like?
It's funny because, you know, like in Western culture, British people are kind of known as being reserved and humble and, you know, all that sort of thing compared to like American. Like Taiwanese feel like they're really like that.
Yeah.
I have a clear memory actually of going up to Green Eyes and being like, that was brilliant. Like, I love that. And what are your names?
Mm.
And chatting to them. And they were almost just like, oh, you liked that. Not that they were down on themselves, but it was just more like, oh, great, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I guess a thing as well that was interesting was, obviously at that point, we couldn't really speak Chinese at all. We knew ni hao, xie xie, and hao chi, or pretty much that was it. Probably we found a lot of them were actually really good at communicating in English already, despite being young and not necessarily having traveled abroad. Like you say, people being reserved, but I think there was still quite a willingness to try and communicate, which was really nice, wasn't it?
Yeah, they did actually. I think now, like, I've been to a lot of other places, that's not something you can take for granted, actually, how good people can be at English.
Yeah.
I think I probably didn't appreciate fully how much everyone was really good at English, because it was my first foray into somewhere that was so far removed from England. Whereas, like, actually, there's loads of places in the world where you're like, well, you just have to use hand signals.
As well as that, I think it was quite, like you're talking about that friendliness. I don't know if you'd agree that I found that a great motivator for learning Mandarin.
Yes.
I feel like, oh, wow, these people are really willing to connect with me at my level. How can I reciprocate? I remember actually your Mandarin probably was the best of the band.
I think I quite like languages. There's something really exciting about it, isn't there? About like, I got that right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I went into that shop and I got the thing that I went for.
Yeah.
but it's just that you're connecting, and that's really, it feels good to go somewhere and connect with people. And language obviously really helps you do that. But yeah, it's annoying because we did like about 2 years, I think, of like a
classes,
night course,
that's right,
in Mandarin. Yeah. And also we were going a couple of times a year at that point. And so I think we probably got half decent at Chinese. I really remember my memory of the last time I went when I was in the band. I remember being in a taxi on my own. And I had a conversation. It was probably really basic, but I had a conversation with the taxi driver the whole way back in Chinese.
That's great.
And I remember at that point being like, oh, I'm getting all right at this. But then... But then never used it again, really. A couple of years later, I went to South America for about 6 months and got quite good at Spanish, actually. Spanish is a lot more... Spanish is quite a simple language. It's really nice. It's just a really logical, like it just, everything makes sense. And I got quite good at Spanish, but I did always feel like every word I learn of Spanish is a Chinese word leaving my mind. Because I feel like now, like my Chinese is so... It's really bad. I imagine it would come back quicker than I realized,
I'm sure,
but
I'm sure. Yeah.
Do you guys get to use it a lot now?
Yeah, quite often. in the UK these days, there's so many more people that can speak Chinese.
Yeah.
And we also are still performing songs in Chinese around the place. So it's interesting. But yeah, recently I was in Sainsbury's and there were two students speaking Chinese who couldn't understand what the shop attendant was saying. And so I stepped in and helped them out. And it was a nice moment feeling like paying back some of the kindness that we received in Taiwan.
Yeah. And what a good tool for you to be able to hear that someone's struggling. Probably still every day. I'm in London, like every day I interact with someone who probably doesn't speak English as their first language, but I can't even hear if they're struggling. Whereas that's such a cool tool, isn't it? It's like you're able to now, it opens you up to anyone who's speaking that language. You know, they're looking for a bus. It's down there, you know, or something.
For me, I've got the challenge of trying to persuade the children to learn both language, or to speak both languages. So being in England, they're very good at English and they can understand Mandarin. But I think as the supposedly the research says that children will always adapt to their environment. So if we speak to them in Chinese, they'll reply in English.
Mm.
Do you know, it's a funny thing that happened recently. So this is how much culture's moved. My wife, Katie, her dad, he'd be quite an English traditional guy. And we went recently and he'd read that seaweed's like the cool new thing that everyone's eating. And so he went down the beach and got some seaweed.
Really?
And baked it in the oven. And we were like, it was like covered in sand. And it was the most... But there you go. That's so funny. A tiny... sliver into how much if it's happening in that house, it's changed.
Brilliant. Well, talking of food, can you remember one particular food that you'd pick out from your visits to Taiwan that would be your favorite?
Definitely the dumplings.
Yep.
Okay.
I know there's a million kinds of dumplings, but the gyoza, that type, the fried,
the gortier.
Gortier, yeah. Ah. I think about it all the time. I order that a lot. For me, like, I'm often like on the go around London, and so there's something really nice about like I don't have time to have lunch, or maybe I'm not that hungry because I had something, but just like stop in at a Chinese
amazing
place and just order like six of them to eat on the go. And it's just the tastiest, and then like 10 minutes later you're wishing you'd ordered 12. But you know, when it's good, because I mean you do get there's a pretty wide range
of quality,
I suppose, when it's good. Oh man, it's delicious. But I think nothing will beat night market street food, watching it be fried in front of your eyes. The other one as well I used to love was just fried rice, like egg fried rice, beef fried rice, you know, that kind of whatever I fancied when I'd arrive at like lunchtime, I'm going to head down the street and just see what they're making and have.
Yeah.
Because, oh man, it's just so tasty. In fact, I was thinking about it this morning and I quite often tried to make my own egg fried rice.
Okay.
Wow, okay.
I've got a WhatsApp group with two other guys and we're always sharing like tricks for how to do good egg fried rice. But it's never that good. It's always okay. It's always edible and I enjoy it, but it's not that good.
One of the secrets might be the Taiwanese rice, because Taiwanese rice is really, really good quality rice, you see. So that makes it quite different.
I think the secret with any kind of Chinese food is ingredients. It's not always, that sounds like an obvious thing to say with any kind of cooking. I'm not like a food expert, but I do think, because I've cooked like Indian and Nepalese curries, and what I've discovered is you have to really learn about spices. That's kind of the key to that. Mm. And when you get that, you're like, oh man, it was just about creating this crazy cocktail of spices, and then it's everything's amazing.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, it does make such a big difference in Chinese stuff, and it's like, it's close to not doable in this country. You can't, like, if you go down a Chinese supermarket and get really good stuff, you can do it, and you get the right recipes and the right people tell you what to do. But I think you'll probably only get 75% of the way there. At best.
That's right.
But if you, like me, are, if you go down Aldi and get that stuff, it's okay. It's a meal. That's all it is.
Great. Well, thanks very much. The last question I'd be interested to get your perspective on is, you mentioned how, you know, Taiwan was kind of like your first long-range trip both distance and culturally. Have you found that that's had an influence on what you're doing now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely. It definitely gave me a really good first experience of travel, I suppose, and experiencing different cultures. And I feel like I've actually done quite a lot of travel now. And it was such a great first experience of a dramatically different culture from mine. Because, like I say, it was just so welcoming and easy. And there's just something I really like about Taiwan. I like something that always sticks in my head is the underground, the MRT. Because right, I think it was quite striking for us, wasn't it, to go there. And it's like so spacious and air-conditioned and clean.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, and it would be on time and all that. Like, but like, you know, I use the underground a lot. And it's obviously an amazing tool, but it's like, it's the opposite of all those things.
I think you memorized all the stations, didn't you?
I did. I did know them all at one point. But then I remember a few years ago looking at the map.
They've added some more.
So much bigger now, isn't it?
It's expanded a lot. Yeah,
it's expanded so fast. Yeah. We'd also really like to ask you, creatively, what are you up to these days?
Yeah, I work in comedy now as a writer, a joke writer, in mostly TV these days, but work with stand-up comedians on their live shows as well and some social media stuff. I feel like for all the years that we spent learning what music is together, it does feel relevant to me. I think that, like, in a way that I'm not really able to explain really, but like the kind of, it's really nice to just still be doing creative work and work that I enjoy. I think if you enjoy work, you're probably in the top 1% of luckiest, you know, regardless of how well you do it.
Totally.
Like, you know, it's just as long as you enjoy it, that's quite hard.
Yeah.
That's quite a lucky place to be. And so I feel like that. And I feel like I still get to do a bit of travel, actually, which not as much as, but it's not as kind of, I don't feel like I really get to see the world. I've worked in Australia and things, but you're just in a studio the whole time. So it's kind of like, it's not quite the same as what we used to do. But in fact, I had a couple of months ago, I was working in, because a lot of TV now is in Salford,
okay,
Keys, which is, and so I was working on this show recently and my hotel room, I could see Old Trafford out the windows, right there.
Oh, wow.
And while I was there, there was two Man United games, and I'm a Man United fan, but there was never a second to go to the games, which is a shame. But I could see people going in and out of the stadium, and I was like, oh, man.
Oh, no.
All of those experiences in Taiwan, and just with the band outside of Taiwan, and everything, it's like it all sort of builds what you're capable of. And you're, like, for me, I think something that we were young, so it was kind of, but there was something kind of innovative about just going, like, let's go to a festival on the other side of the world. And also kind of it put in me, I think your first jobs that aren't, you know, I worked in an old folks home and all that kind of stuff in a shop. But like, that's my first experience of like, it was a project, right? And I think that over my younger years kind of put in a work ethic, because I guess if we weren't going to do the things that we wanted to do, they just wouldn't get done.
Mm.
As opposed to a job where a boss tells you something and if you don't do it, you won't get paid or something. It felt like a bit, it kind of gave me a drive to get up in the morning and go, right, what do we need to get done? That actually, when I think back, I probably wasn't that good at then, but it kind of was the building blocks of that, which you have to be as a self-employed person in the arts and in the immediate, you really have to.
Mm,
and I do feel like my, so a skill I've got is being able to kind of put a lot of work into stuff. And I feel like that was kind of really developed back in those days. And just to think innovatively, think what could you do? What could the solution be to this thing that isn't obvious? Or what kind of experiment could you run that might not work, but it's better than sitting around and waiting for someone to come and give you a record deal, like in our situation.
That's right. Yeah, we were.
It's like taking the, I don't know, just thinking outside the box. And I can see in my own life, and my own work now, how much that the DNA is still there.
It's like you say, we were very clearly told by the powers that be in the music industry to make EPs and go to America and get signed to a major label. And so yeah. we gave up on that, made an album and went to Taiwan.
Went the opposite direction.
Which is so funny because now people will say to us, oh, what a commercial decision. You guys, yeah, you obviously really thought about that. And it was a passion rather yeah. than a commercial decision because nobody at that point thought that Asian economies would become so influential in the world scene. Yeah. So, yeah, really interesting.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? Yeah, that's a really good point. It's like a commercial decision. But it's like, well, it's the very opposite of the commercial decision that everyone was saying to do. So,
yeah.
yeah, I guess it's always easy to kind of say things in hindsight. But
yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I think it was definitely a passion. Josh, it was your kind of, you instigated Taiwan as a place for us to look into because you had met a load of Taiwanese people and had become interested in the culture and the place.
Yeah, that's right. And I think our experiences in transition in the band have always been that the best opportunities have come through friendship. And I imagine you probably find a similar thing in the comedy world that you get your best opportunities through friends and contacts as opposed
massively
to, through, you know,
yeah, yeah,
companies and agents.
Yeah, you have to be pretty phenomenal at something for people to want to work with you if they don't like you.
Yeah.
There's a few people like that.
And people on the outside don't realize yeah. that. Yeah.
But yeah. I think that's the other thing is like if you're that age, 19, it is quite like a growing experience to go somewhere new and just have to go, like at the festival, just go up to people, talk to them. And that's like, that's a skill set that I feel still it's challenging, but I still feel like it's important and I'm working on. But a lot of people never develop if you're never forced to develop it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great experience for us, especially those first. I imagine for you guys, you've got kind of different classes of experience at Taiwan because you actually lived there, so that must have felt like a completely different style of like those first couple of years when we would go out there and kind of we were just sort of putting our feet in the water and seeing if this was a thing to do.
Yeah, well, the whole underwater thing is quite, that's how I would describe it culturally. You end up being underwater yeah. because once you try and immerse yourself and get out of the English bubble, it's just such a good thing, like you say, about growing as well. You realize, oh, I have to learn the Chinese words for things now, or have a chat to someone when I'm not confident 100% in the vocabulary I've got, but that's the way you actually try new things and,
yeah.
you know, life gets exciting.
When was the last time you guys went back there?
Before pandemic for me.
Yeah, so it's been a while. For me, I moved back to the UK in 2021, June 2021, so just over 2 years as well. So very keen to head back, very keen to head back.
Yeah.
And For anyone who is listening, who's inspired and wants to go to Taiwan, then enter our songwriting competition. Write a song that relates to Taiwan, include 3 words of Mandarin, and you might be able to win those free tickets to get there.
One more memory before we finish. I remember you training for a marathon, Steve, which I think that must have been intense training, but probably did you made you so fit in the long run.
I remember doing it because it was so hot, and so I would do my training runs yeah. at like midnight, and even then it was really
so
hot.
Amazing.
I remember there was a
yeah. Chiang Kai-shek Square.
I think it was around Chiang Kai-shek
yeah.
Square, because
yeah,
I used to run down there, and I had calculated that the whole perimeter was a certain distance. A few kilometers probably or something.
That's right, yeah.
But there was, on one of the corners, there was a temperature and the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
A digital kind of... And it was like, you know, 1 a.m. and I was like, I mean, I think I did a 12-mile run one of those nights.
Oh, wow.
And was just running. And every time I got to that corner, I was like, I've done another couple of miles. And I'd look and I'd be like, oh, man, it's like 36 degrees. I was like, this is extremely hard.
Yeah, thanks so much for talking and recording today, Steve.
Yeah, thank you.
Really nice for us to catch up with you.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
And hopefully listeners as well will have got a bit more of a sense of what it was like for transition back when we first started going to Taiwan. And
yeah.
I guess we refer to it as a yeah. pioneering experience because we were the only British band at Spring Scream at the time and the only In fact, we were the only band to fly in from outside of Asia for that particular festival, I remember.
Yeah.
So, yeah, certainly it's influenced who we are and what we've done. And it's really great to hear you describe about how some of those things have influenced you and your journey from music into the comedy scene as well.
Yeah.
And are you at the Edinburgh Festival this year?
I'm not. I've directed one show that's going up, but I'm not actually going up.
Okay.
I'm trying to do Edinburgh 1 year on and 1 year off.
Sure, yeah.
So I don't get too jaded by it. So this year's my year off, but I did direct one just because I like him.
Cool.
Yeah. So if anyone's at Edinburgh, check out Stuart Laws. He's great.
There you go.
Brilliant. We will do. Well, thanks so much for listening today, everybody. Please look out for Transition on your favourite podcast provider. We will be back in a couple of weeks. If you'd like to send us a question or get in touch, use Facebook Transition TW or transition.tk. Until next time.
That's right. And if you're interested, if this has whet your appetite for going to Taiwan, then click the link to join the song competition that you can find in the notes below and send us your entry. We're really looking forward to hearing lots of creative ideas and selecting a winner who will travel to Taiwan for free.